Locke and Wiley, joined by TJ Houshmandzadeh and Fox Sports officiating guru Dean Blandino. All right, as expected, and it's an attempt to stop New Orleans Saints from whining about an alleged blown pass interference in the NFC Championship, the NFL has created an officiating crisis. The league went 99 years without subjecting its referees to replay review of pass interference. But after Sean Payton led a revolt, the rulemakers decided the only way to make peace with New Orleans was to sign a peace treaty. And so, in the year 100 of the league, called and uncalled pass interference is now subject to review. Of course, there's absolutely no consistency to the reviews. How could there be? Pass interference is mostly a judgment call in a contact sport. The replay standard of clear and obvious is another subjective decision. You stack subjective decisions on top of each other, and you have what happened this weekend in the NFL. Chaos. You have a Raiders receiver getting flagged for offensive pass interference just because he's releasing off the line of scrimmage, trying to get into his route. You have an Eagles defender pulling the shoulder of Julio Jones while the ball is in the air, and replay ruling there was no pass interference. What's worse is the new review has made replay czar Al Riveron a household name. This is a classic case of the law of unintended consequences. It's the Streisand effect. You remember it in 2002 when a photographer tried to photograph the entire California coastline and Barbara Streisand sued him for $50 million because you could see her house in one of his pictures. When Streisand sued, only four people had seen the picture of her house. After her failed lawsuit went public, hundreds of thousands downloaded the photograph. The Streisand effect is a fun example of the law of unintended consequences. The 1919 Treaty of Versailles, after World War I, isn't fun. The treaty was the platform that elevated Adolf Hitler to power in Germany. 100 years later, in the aftermath of the NFC Championship, the NFL signed the Treaty of New Orleans. It pacified Sean Payton. The consequence is it has elevated NFL referees to the same level of importance as NFL players. We're spending way too much time on Sundays looking at the right corner of our TV screens, wondering when the yellow flag graphic will pop up. Everything is like watching a kickoff or punt return. We're being trained to expect a penalty flag. The NFL must explore ways to de-emphasize the refs. They can start by revoking the Treaty of New Orleans immediately. This one-year trial period is already a massive failure. All right, guys, Dean, start us off since you're the expert. Does the NFL need to revoke the PI review rule?
You know, I don't know if they're ready to revoke it. That would take something catastrophic to do it in season. I do feel like early returns are not positive, and it's a one-year change. And I would think, based on if this continues, this would be one of the few times where the league puts in a rule for 1 year and they don't extend it beyond that one-year period, where they would just scrap it and start over. And if it continues like this, that's what we may see.
It was a one-year trial period, not a two-week trial period. So we have to respect the process, which I know is tough for most people in terms of their entertainment product. It has to hit the ground running or else. But I remember being in every team meeting room and coaches always saying, don't leave it in the hands of the officials. And what that means in terms of this conversation means that you got to understand that they're not just players that are on the field that are human beings, but officials. And 98% of all calls are the perfect call. And then there's 1% that is like, I wouldn't have called that, but whatever. And then there's 1% where we're like, that's egregious. That's just insane. So what's happening now is because of the emphasis placed on this new rule change, like you said, 99 years one way, now we switch it. Everyone is getting consumed with that instead of what I get consumed with, which is bad coaching, bad performances. I'm still consumed with how do you have Cam Newton playing on a seal block opposite a wide bunch on a fourth and one play, and Christian McCaffrey's running lateral instead of Cam Newton going up the middle. I'm concerned with that. I don't leave a Sunday game talking about the officials as much as that. I'm watching a fourth and three, and I'm seeing a cover zero, and I'm like, Julio Jones going to get the ball right there in the flats and score easily. So when you get caught up in the diversion of all the officials making these major errors, I think you're not really seeing the meat and potatoes of every game, which is they're doing a great job all in. It's just a play here or play there that's really the issue.
had I not watched the Super Bowl with Dean Blandino, the Patriots and Rams this year, I would have said, oh, this rule needs to be revoked. But he enlightened me watching that game. And a lot of it is, number one, the coaches need to understand what they should review, what's PI, go over it with their players. And the biggest thing you said to me, he probably don't remember this, is when a ref makes a bad call, everybody looks at him and says, oh, my God, this ref sucks. He's terrible. They need to change the rules. But what you just said, when a coach makes a bad call, is a ref going to walk up to the coach and say, hey, that was a bad call on 4th and 1. I don't think you should have done that. They don't do it. And so they are going to make bad calls. And had I not sat with you and watched that Super Bowl, I'd have been like, oh, man, this rule is terrible. The rule still needs to be altered. But it is what it is.
It's shining a light. Pass interference has been subjective since it went into the rule book. And by making it reviewable, it's just shining a light on how subjective these calls really are. The officials aren't any better or worse at pass interference, but now we've got a spotlight on it.
Yep.
And that's why we're talking about it. And to TJ's point, and I've had several coaches tell me, Bill Belichick, Jim Caldwell, they say there are three groups of people out there on the football field that affect the game. Players, coaches, and officials. And officials make the least amount of mistakes. But we're focused on those mistakes.
Spotlighting.
Spotlight. That's it.
But as a fan who watches on TV, occasionally buys tickets, when I buy that ticket or when I turn on my TV, I want to see the players first, the coaches second, and I don't want to see the referees. I really don't want to know their names. I don't care about them. They're not a reason for me to watch. And now we have a lead. Al Riveron's a household name.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's inappropriate. We've already seen it with Ed Hockley with his guns out. There's some, hey, look at me referees that have, you know, the league tolerated for too long. But Marcel, the thing about, you also have to ask yourself, how are you watching the game? And for the overwhelming majority of NFL fans, they're focused on their favorite team.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not on red zone. And so they're watching one team the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
One game. And these referees' calls, because, again, their expectations are the players and the coaches are going to decide the game. Not Al Riveron sitting in some booth in New York. Not even the refs on the field should be deciding these games. It's too much attention on people no one gives a damn about.
Well, it could be too much attention, and that's the problem with the spotlight, but it's not too much impact. Like, we have to look at the numbers. When a referee does the right thing, it goes unnoticed. But that's happening. But that's happening all the time, like 98, if not 99% of the time. So when you want to have outrage over the one call here and the one call there, you're not taking into account the balance that's necessary of all the calls.
But that, I'm not even really about one call. I'm more really about, like, we're really stopping this game over some incidental contact in a contact sport, and now they're sitting up in a booth deciding whether that's pass interference or not. I say, let that go. So what? He missed the call.
I mean, sometimes it's not even pass. I think Denver lost the game on a bad call. They lost that game on a bad call. So it's more than just PI calls.
Just let it go.
Well, and we're micromanaging. Officiating is not an exact science. And there's an art to it. And we're micromanaging that. And perfect example, Seahawks Steelers yesterday, Wilson gets hit in the head. It's clearly a foul. No call. But we can't review that. Now we're going to look at the contact downfield, and we're going to analyze that for 3 minutes. And because there was a little tug, 38-yard penalty. And so where the focus, I believe, right now, we're focusing on the wrong thing.
Yes.
Well, and you're making my point in terms of when a coach or a player does something wrong, we just go to the next play. We don't put it under, let's go underneath the hood and let's we'll do a do-over. Mistakes are going to happen. The refs are going to make mistakes. Let's let it go and move on to the next play. I don't need every freaking thing reviewed. It's a distraction to me. And the game was fine for 99 years without having to go, oh, they may have missed this judgment call. Let's go under review here. Let's stop the game and focus on these guys while they figure out if they blew a judgment call. I just don't need it.
Well, you said it. When you stack subjective call on subjective call, you're not going to a greater place. You know what I mean? There's nothing objective about
that. That's all we're doing with reviewing pass interference. We're taking one person's judgment and replacing it with another. This isn't objective. This isn't the ball touching the ground. This is, was there enough contact to affect Jason from making that catch? Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. And one of the biggest culprit right now is technology. Because the technology 20 years ago, we didn't have high definition. We didn't have 4K. You watched the play. It happened. The people at home accepted it. Now, because we're analyzing it and seeing it from every different angle, the expectation is we got to get that right.
The fans see it before, and they automatically, this should be the call. And if that's not the call, they're furious.
Like, for me, I think Carson Wentz tried to score a touchdown. His knee went down before he got.
Yes.
That's reviewable. You can make an objective decision that his knee was down. I get that. Yeah. Marcellus, what I can't believe is you this is one of your favorite statements.
Lasers?
Perfection is the enemy
of good.
Of good.
Yeah.
And so the
NFL, I'm not seeking perfection.
Right. But we are, with this rule, trying to review. We're trying to make the game more perfect and officiating more perfect, and it just can't be done. It's
well,
not worth
I wouldn't apply that adage to this, because I think what was occurring is the chunk of yardage, like you said, 38 yards, it was affecting football games massively to the point where they focused in on this rule because the swing is just too great. No other rule can change field position like a pass interference, to the point where offensive coordinators started to get cute. Throw a few 50-50 balls up there because you're going to get the call. So I like the NFL protecting the integrity of how you call a game by actually focusing on this rule. It's going to come with some consequences, maybe a couple more minutes, maybe a couple more reviews. But in totality, I still think they're doing a remarkable job.
What people aren't talking about is it also gets and gains a lot of animosity, players to officials, coaches to officials, fans to officials. And so that animosity – they're humans. They got to go home and work another job. They got to live a life. And so that animosity from, oh, man, this dude, you see him in the airport. He made a bad call. I want to cuss him out. You mad over something that the NFL can possibly prevent.
Think this rule comes back next year?
I don't know. If I had to say now, probably not.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
Fox College football analyst Reggie Bush is back with us. Let's move to college football, where a couple of quarterbacks have separated themselves from the pack so far this season. With touchdown Tua and Jalen Hurts dominating early season Heisman chatter, according to FoxBet, Tua is barely edging Jalen as the favorite to win the award, with both way ahead of the rest of the field, which makes sense given their numbers. Both guys are having huge years, with Tua throwing for more yards and touchdowns, but Jalen adding some big rushing numbers to his passing game. All right, look. You know what? I'm going to let you go first, Reggie.
Yeah.
Who's going to win the Heisman, Tua or Jalen Hurts?
I think it's going to be Jalen Hurts. And I think the way he played the situation, I think he played it perfectly, because I think we saw him grow up and become a man before our eyes. And he went from having to face SEC defenses every week to now playing against Big 12 defenses. So what you saw against UCLA, it, to me, is a microcosm of what's going to happen for the rest of the year, because there is not a team, not a defense on Oklahoma's schedule that is going to shut them down, is going to slow them down. And Jalen Hurts has receivers like CeeDee Lamb. I mean, he has speed at every position. It doesn't matter who he throws the ball to. They all got speed. And so, to me, it's going to be tough for anybody to slow him down. And he's going to continue to put up these kind of numbers week in and week out. Tua has to play Auburn. He got to play LSU. He has to play some tough defenses. So, by that, I think that Jalen Hurts wins the Heisman.
Yeah, look, I want to push back on you, but I think that's what's going to be the reality. I've learned a long time ago watching these Heisman hopefuls that when the numbers are comparable, that the story is the trump card. That's what's going to win. And last year we saw with Kyler Murray, that was a better story than Tua in terms of the little engine that could, and wow, this dynamic offense and this football quarterback factory out of Oklahoma. Then Jalen Hurts lands there as well. So now we're seeing the same thing despite having comparable numbers. However, my issue is this. So far, Oklahoma has played weaker opponents. Yep. They played one Power 5 team, and that's UCLA, which is right now glorified high school out there, the way that the Rose Bowl is looking. I know you love that joke, Reggie. But the thing about it is, If you haven't played the same level of competition and you're losing in some of the major statistical categories to another guy, and Tua is due something of this magnitude. Think about it. If Tua leaves this year for the draft, number one overall pick more than likely, are you kidding me? Tua didn't win the Heisman in either of these years with the numbers he's put up. Yeah. Near perfection if you talk about his touchdown-interception ratio. So I just don't think that he's going to get a chance because of the story out of Oklahoma, but he should.
But also same thing for Jalen. Jalen has more touchdowns than he has incompletions. Yeah. So he's also putting up the numbers to make a case for winning that Heisman Trophy as well.
Yeah. This is going to get ugly. It's going to get ugly because jealousy rules all of man. Three straight years, an Oklahoma quarterback winning the Heisman Trophy. Mm. People are going to campaign against this. Jalen Hurts' story is so positive, and that kid is such an amazing story that there's going to be some reluctance in September and October.
Yeah, great point.
But come November, it's going to be damn near like Trump and Hillary all over again. This is going to get ugly. The negative campaigning, and I'm going to tell you what's going to impact it. If Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray struggle in this NFL season in October and November, that's a little gimmicky offense, man. Mm-hmm. Are we really going to do this to Tua? He's clearly the better pro prospect and the better quarterback. And Nick Saban and Alabama fans have the courage to negative campaign. Mm-hmm. Even though it's Jalen Hurts,
yeah,
they have the courage to be like, because look, this is great for the Oklahoma brand. Come here, you'll win the Heisman Trophy. And so if I'm Clemson, if I'm Dabo, if I'm Nick Saban, I don't want Oklahoma to continue with this narrative. And so I look for them to start pushing out the narrative. Hey, man, these Oklahoma, it's a gimmick offense. Tua is the real deal. I think it's going to get ugly, and I think there's a chance Tua could win in that scenario.
And I also think you have to understand Lincoln Riley as well, because you know when it's getting closer towards the end, Lincoln Riley's going to be trying to push his guy, keep him on the field longer, right? Yeah. Because Oklahoma doesn't have the same defense as Alabama, period. So Tua's going to be sitting by the third or fourth quarter, which he has already done. Against Duke, he was sitting by the third quarter. And so in some of these games, he may be sitting early. Jalen Hurts is going to be playing the whole football game. Even in the Oklahoma game, when they were blowing him out the water. UCLA game. He was still in there towards the end of the game. We were screaming at the TV, get him out of there, because if he gets hurt, then
he wants that's a third Heisman.
Hey, let's be real.
He wants that.
Alabama wins this no matter how this plays out, because they can walk around in recruiting and say, even our backups can win a Heisman. Think about that. Can you imagine coming to somebody's living room saying that?
Now let's move to Miami, where Brian Flores' head coaching career is off to a terrible start, with reports of players trying to jump ship after the Dolphins lost their first two games by a combined 102-10.
Ooh.
They've been so bad, there's already talk that the team could be headed for 0-16. But Flores says his background will help him deal with whatever is headed his way.
I'm very prepared for difficult moments. I learned resiliency at a very early age. And I think, you know, when you deal with tough times, you want to lean on the people who you trust and, care about you and have your back.
All right, Hugh, the NFL is very unforgiving. They've stripped the Dolphins of all their best weapons and tools. Can you mentally prepare for what Brian Flores seems to be headed for?
Well, obviously, Jason, I've been there. So it's a tough spot to be in. You got to, work at it each and every day, because first you got to work on you before you can work on your team, the organization, the fans, and everybody else. I think, obviously, he said it. You know, you got to really start to have the right team of people around you, the people you trust, people who you know believe in you that can keep you moving forward. But he has a tough job, because every day he has to walk in that building and motivate his football team. Every day he has to talk to the media.
Now, when you're talking about creating a culture, and you talk about the projections of this team potentially being a winless team, that culture that's being created this year, can it ever evolve? Can it change if it's losing?
That's tough, because when you're hired, you just said it, it's about changing a culture, because things wasn't going as well, and now it's not starting off the way you wanted it to. The culture has now really fallen to another level. So that's what he's going to have to try to flip as fast as he can. Now, how do you do that? You got to do that a lot of different ways, you know, and sometimes that through players, personnel, people, organization, the whole nine yards. But that's a tough job.
Am I naive for thinking that Stephen Ross is going to stand behind Brian Flores no matter what happens this season? Am I naive for thinking he can survive 0-16?
No, you're not. I think, you know, again, I survived it, so I know what that is. And so I think, obviously, he's in a situation where he's with people he trusts. Obviously, they knew that maybe things wasn't going to go as well as maybe they wanted them to. But again, he has to stay collaborative with the group and make sure that he sees this through. And again, there's got to be some assurances for him that he's going to be okay.
Now, typically the only opportunities available for a new head coach are bad situations. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Brian Flores, look at your situation, I remember the reports and the analysis at the time. Is it better off for a guy like you, Brian, to pass on opportunities like this just because you know you kind of set up to fail?
Well, absolutely, if that's what you know. You know, when you're, there's only 32 of these jobs.
Yeah.
So when you get these opportunities, you know, I don't think people come in with the thought that they're setting up to fail. You know, I hope that's not the case. You know, I don't think it says anywhere in anybody's contract that you're there to lose. I think you're there to try to win.
Yeah, Hubert, let's look at this offseason. Let's look at the poaching of the veterans. Let's look at the projections of two top 10 picks. The writing's on the wall.
I think you said it, but that was after he got there.
Yeah.
You know, so again, I think you got to make sure that you know for sure what the plan is, first and foremost. And now, once you're in there, has it changed? You know, have we went to another level?
Hubert, let's be real.
Different conversation?
They've had one winning season in, what, 11 years? Like, how much writing do you need to see on the wall before you realize they're talking to you?
Well, no doubt, but still, you know, you still got to believe the people that bring you there.
Let me ask this, though, to add to Marcellus Square. I don't think you can be a head coach in the NFL if you don't believe you can fix that.
Absolutely.
The whole mindset of a head coach is, I can fix failure.
You're right. We want to run to those opportunities because that's how you build your legacy, that you're able to change the outcome of what a losing organization has been about. So there's no question. Most head coaches would take that challenge in the right situation.
This can flip around. The Lakers, rags to riches and back down to rags.
Right.
And you talk about second most championships, then you look now, six consecutive years, no playoffs. Miami going forward, key ingredients, special sauce to turn this thing around?
Well, first of all, you got to be on the same page. You got to have the same vision, you know, and I think Chris Greer, what he's going to do, obviously they've accumulated a lot of assets, you know, and so it's going to be very important that those assets turn into players, you know, in order to get the organization headed in the right direction. And true, they had to support Coach Flores. I mean, you have to support him from the beginning to the end, because he's the one that's standing out in front of it all. You know, dealing with the media every day, and as I said, dealing with the football team.
The thing that I think is gonna be tough, though, is if they put 0-16 on you, that's a stigma that's hard to shake no matter what you do. Whitlock and Wiley, Eric Dixon and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to Cam Newton, who has been dealing with a foot injury this week and now reportedly is unlikely to play Sunday after missing practice again today. Cam has had a rough start to the year as the Panthers have fallen to 0-2. And today, Ron Rivera got a little testy when asked about his quarterback.
Would you think Cam would travel in either event, or would that be decided tomorrow?
See, you guys want to watch, sit there and watch, so you'll have to wait and see. I'm not going to talk about it anymore, guys. I mean, let's talk about Arizona. I mean, I haven't really talked about Arizona, you know, so it'd be good to answer those kind of questions.
Cam, though.
I know it's about Cam, but I don't know anymore until tomorrow. So let's just, you know, let's talk about Arizona. If not, there's no reason for me to stand here.
You felt before the opener, you were 100% confident he was going to be ready to go. Where are you on that level now?
I just asked you to ask me questions about somebody else. I'm not going to do this anymore, okay? I told you, I won't know anything until tomorrow, okay? Thank you.
Hot 100.
Ron Rivera a bit testy here. Do you think the Panthers still view Cam Newton as their franchise quarterback?
Absolutely, as they should. But there is some conversation going on about, is this the new Cam Newton? Injury prone, undermining his greatness because of injury. And if that's the situation, you can start to see them licking their fingers, grabbing the corner, top right corner of the page, not flipping it yet, but starting to get into that mindset of maybe we have to start thinking of alternatives. And it's unfortunate. Cam Newton, by the numbers, no touchdowns this year running or throwing. That's been four games with no passing touchdowns going back to last year. He has the highest errant throwing percentage in the NFL. That means uncatchable balls for TJ Houshmandzadeh, the highest. So I know it's injury related. I can see that. I believe that. But if you're an organization that has to do its due diligence to prepare for what's next, there is some internal conversation of, is this the new Cam Newton?
Yeah, they still view him as a franchise quarterback. But when you go 0-8 in your last eight starts, it's some doubt in their mind saying, is he still our franchise quarterback? And when I look at it, like, he's averaging 286 yards passing this year. That's more than he's done in his entire career. What he's missing, and if he's really hurt, is the mobility from a running perspective. His foot's hurt. He can't run the ball. And that's what's missing. He's always been erratic throwing the ball. That's nothing new. He hasn't been the most accurate passer, but he's been effective because he's been able to run the ball. And so if he can get his foot right, but he better hope Kyle Allen don't go in there and play well, because in Kyle Allen's only start last year, he had 111 passer rating. So if Kyle Allen, if Cam Newton misses more than one game and Kyle Allen balls, then they can say, ah, maybe he's not our franchise quarterback. Mm.
Isn't it funny how, didn't I tell you, when you're 0-2 and you're 2-0, how the difference is? You see how the coach is? When you're 0-2, and if you're 2-0, no, he would answer that question, no problem. Of course he's our franchise quarterback. You know, we're struggling right now. We still won, but see, they're 0-2. I believe that Cam is still the franchise quarterback, but I think a lot of people want to see that old Cam when he won the MVP. And we haven't seen that in a while. And sometimes, I mean, it's because of injuries. I mean, and you're right. Cam is a scrambling quarterback. He's a guy that can get out of trouble. He's a big target. He's, to me, a quarterback that's taking a lot of shots. And he's a quarterback. They still treat him like almost like a running back. But I still say he is the franchise quarterback there.
I think there's real doubt, and I think Kyle Allen's being given a shot here against one of the worst teams in football. They were the worst team last year. Might be again, if not for Miami, probably the second worst team. If Kyle Allen shows anything, there's going to be a QB controversy in Carolina if he shows anything, because Cam's never going to run again. He's never going to be that same running dynamic quarterback again. Mm. He's taken too many shots. That's over with. That's why he's been trying to transition into a pocket passer. I really think they're trying to give this dude a week off to get his head right, because the uncatchable balls, the inaccuracy, he's never been the most accurate, but now it's gotten to a level where it's almost embarrassing and it's hindering the offense from having any success. And so if he's never going to run again, which I think everybody knows, them days is done, can Cam Newton really be a franchise pocket passing quarterback? I don't think Carolina believes he can be.
There are dual realities occurring to all your points, and let's add this layer. Here's one reality. This division is wide open. Only division in the NFC that doesn't have a 2-0 team. So we could catch up really fast. Here's the problem. If you go out there and lose this next game, you're 0-3. And since 1980, there's been 176 teams that started 0-3. Only six have made the postseason. And I was on one of those. And you know what it took for us to go from 0-3 to 10-6 and make the playoffs?
A new quarterback.
New quarterback.
Damn it!
So, Cam, man, I'm just telling you, brother, do the history on this. This is a tough place to be.
Answer your question, Whitlock. He can't just transform himself into a pocket quarterback. When he won MVP, he completed just under 60% of his passes. And in today's NFL, where you can't touch a receiver, that's very low. And so it's going to be hard for him to say, okay, now I'm going to turn in to a baby Drew Brees and complete 65% of my passes. And the quarterbacks now.
Last year, he completed
the highest percentage of his career last year. So give him love. And he was 62 MVP candidate before the injury.
And then you lose your next eight starts. Yeah, and so when
hurt.
You can complete 70% of your passes. If it's not translating into wins, it doesn't matter. Mm.
And that's what it's all about, wins. I don't, Kyle Allen is not going to take Cam Newton's position.
Man, if Kyle Allen go out there and win these next two games,
I still say no. He's not going to take his spot. I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, I think the Carolina Panthers still look at Cam Newton as their guy. You know, even though he wears scarves, but I still think
don't do that.
We had to see that. But I still think that he is their guy. Anything.
Here's the issue.
Hold on. I think it's like anything. You know, his head coach, I think more than anyone, wants to see him succeed. And I think it would, if him not playing well or playing hurt, it's almost like unfair. Like, I'm not healthy yet. I'm not at 100%.
But Eric, I want you to answer this. Seriously, man, you're one of the greatest players to ever play the game.
Ever.
And people had the expectation every week. And in order to be that player, it didn't matter how you were feeling, there was an Eric Dickerson standard of play. And if he was a little banged up here or there, you still were able to meet that standard. I think that's the question with Cam, is when he's not physically 100%, can he consistently play at a high level like the all-time greats? Some guys just, and again, you call it being weak, but it's not weak, but there's like a special power that the all-time greats have that maybe Cam doesn't have?
That's a great question, too, because it comes down to pride. It really does. It comes down to pride. Because there was a lot of times I was hurt, but I'm still going to give it 100%. I had some great games being hurt. I mean, the year I ran for 2,000 yards, I had a turf toe all year. No one knew that.
That's my point.
So, I mean, it comes down to like, I'm
turf toe, and you need your feet.
Do you know how bad turf toe is?
You know how bad it is.
Oh, yeah, put the steel plates in them.
That's no joke. That to me is the knock on Cam.
Can he be consistent when he's not physically 100%? That's a legitimate question.
It is, and look, there was a day where everyone, I was in Los Angeles being a native, that thought Eric Dickerson is a Ram, forever a Ram. Trade happens, whatever it may be. Cam's in a different position. Some guys are really suffering from the curse of the gifted. You check your gauges. If everything's not feeling right, I'm a little off right now. Cam Newton has relied on such athleticism that now it's starting to lean where you better rely on fundamentals, and that's what he's trying to transition into. So I don't like to equate that if this is a pain tolerance or mental compartmentalizing issue. This is a guy who's like, whoa, I can't do the same things I've been doing my entire life. Will he be allowed an opportunity to change those things without losing all the equity he built?